Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very, very special and very, very short special, I guess, Empire Podcast. People were asking last week after the San Diego Comic-Con, after the big Marvel Studios panel presentation in Hall H, and all the news that came out of that panel, whether we would do a special podcast talking about the news in detail. And we said no, and that's because we didn't have any time to do so. But now, here we are, four giggling idiots around a microphone. Well, four microphones, we don't just share a microphone. And we decided, you know what, we're going to do that rather than have 20, 25 minutes of Marvel chat in the middle of the Empire Podcast, which, you know, might be annoying to some people. So here we are, we've moved into this own thing. And I am joined by James Dyer.
Hello.
Helen O'Hara.
Hey up.
And Ben Travis.
Hello.
And we're going to be going chronologically through the Marvel slate for the next 2 years. And it is only 2 years because last week, last Saturday, in fact, at Hall H, Kevin Feige, Grand Poobah of all things Marvel, and this is his official job title,
all revealed.
All hail Kevin Feige. I'm wearing Kevin Feige underpants as ever. And he revealed Phase 4 of Marvel Studios' grand adventure, and it's not all confined to the big screen.
No, so is this all of Phase 4, or are some of those other ones that he teased at the end going to be slotted in here somewhere?
That's what I don't know. And I think he maybe has said that Phase 5 is mapped out. But
yes.
If this is all, if all of this is Phase 4, okay, so starting with, and we'll go through them individually, but starting with Black Widow next May, and finishing with Thor, Love and Thunder in November of 2021. Two things. That's a two-year phase. That's the shortest phase. It's a weird conversation to have. It's the shortest phase that Marvel Studios has yet done. And also, it's the only one so far that doesn't culminate in a massive team-up movie.
Technically, one culminated in Ant-Man, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Technically, all the phases have culminated in either an Ant-Man movie or a Spider-Man movie. You're absolutely right. But you know what I mean?
But yeah,
it doesn't build to a big... There's no Avengers movie, for example, listed in the next couple of years. And this won't have... If this is Phase 4, then Phase 4 doesn't have Black Panther 2, Captain Marvel 2, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, another Spider-Man movie, and of course the movie we're all waiting for, Ant-Man and the Wasps.
Apart from that last bit, I agree. And I think some of those will be part of this phase, and this is not all of Phase 4, is my feeling.
That's my feeling too.
Yeah. So that's exciting. But shall we talk about them then?
Shall we go for it?
Let's go for it.
Let's do it. Okay, so starting next May, it is shooting right now. It has been shooting for some time, but it's only been officially confirmed. So what did they think they were shooting? Those people who've been working on this movie. It is Black Widow, which is shooting right now in London and other places. I'm presuming Budapest is one of those places. And they showed some footage from it, which features Natasha Romanoff. This is, as far as we know, it is still a prequel. Natasha Romanoff meeting Yelena Belova, who is essentially the evil Black Widow, played by Florence Pugh, and they also confirmed that Rachel Weisz is part of the cast. That
amazing.
David Harbour is going to be in the movie as well. That was kind of known already. And the Taskmaster, who is a bad guy who can mirror and mimic your movements and your skill set, will be one of the villains in this.
Not affiliated with the comedy show on Dave.
No.
Okay, just to be clear.
No, it's not quite that.
Well, this is exciting, though. I think especially because didn't we find out that this is going to be set between Civil War and Infinity War? So it is kind of prequely, but it's also not necessarily a far, far back prequel.
What did they say that?
I think David Harbour said it in an interview.
Did he?
I didn't hear that.
So.
Well, then, ask for keeping track. Excellent.
I've heard that as well, but that doesn't make any sense to me.
Why not?
Because it looks like we're going to see Budapest, aren't we?
Maybe it's not the Budapest. Maybe it's a Budapest.
A Budapest. Mm. Okay. Hopefully she'll fit at the Columbo statue. That's, I just want to see it.
It's a lovely city. If you get the chance to go, please do it. It's lovely. It's a fantastic cast. This is a really good group of people. I'd be interested to see if we see Julie Delpy, if they go in for any further flashbacks.
Yeah.
That would be kind of cool. But apart from that, I'm very on board with all these people. You can't really argue with Pugh, Weisz and Harbour.
No, you really can't.
And it seems like it'll be quite a grounded way back into the MCU. Mm. So obviously Black Widow stuff is not necessarily supernatural. It doesn't have that kind of... It seems like it'll be a quite ground level film. And that'll be an interesting way into the new phase.
It will be. The only question about that is sort of what does it build to? Where does it lead to?
Yeah.
Why, given what we know about presumably where she presumably ends up, presumably in Endgame, presumably, there has to be a reason.
It feels like
to,
a dead end. I mean, literally.
Yeah. But there has to be a reason to invest.
I know what you mean. Although the part of me that just would be willing to overlook that for the thought of regaining a little bit of the kind of the first two acts of Winter Soldier, which is what I'm hoping this will be.
Oh, God,
you know?
Four.
Very exciting.
Yeah, I don't know that her story has ended. I may be completely and utterly wrong on this.
This is entirely possible, but I guess we'll find out.
I'm sure some people would feel cheated if they somehow find a way to bring it back.
But I would. Like, on the one hand, I'd love to have her back because she's great and I think the character's great. But equally, I feel like it would kind of make a nonsense out of Endgame, and that would bug me.
So angry, I could just lob a bench across a lake.
Steady on.
I mean, it does do that to people.
I don't know. But yeah, I'm intrigued to see how this is going to fit in, because you're right, this is the only movie in this phase that doesn't seem to have the potential to impact on the MCU as a whole,
yeah,
and the wider MCU, unless, of course, there are major revelations about things and, you know
which there could be.
Skrulls could be all over this thing. You don't know.
Equally, depending on, you know, whether it is definitely set there, you can see this possibly having sequels, but existing within its own sort of encapsulated period.
It could also tie into the Winter Soldier and Falcon.
It could.
Sure.
Perhaps its full title is to be Black Widow, an MCU story, and they're going full Star Wars.
Full prequel.
No, please don't do that.
Yeah, no.
It's an involuntary shudder there. We're very excited about that one, and that's going to be followed up by the first Disney Plus series. So this is going to be out in the autumn of next year, and that's The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
And these are all limited series, aren't they?
These are limited series, six to eight episodes.
Which for me, I very much welcome that news.
Yeah.
Like the thought of them being ongoing serials concern, aka like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatnot, this part of me feels that would take some potency out of the MCU.
Yeah.
I like the idea that these are small, contained, perfectly formed, limited series that tell a finite story, which then fits into this. And I imagine you, Chris, will also be quite pleased about that.
Yeah, I am, because there's far too much TV.
It'll
give me more time to watch First Dates and MasterChef. But yeah, I'm excited about this. I also think it's the reason why they get Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan and Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany and Tom Hiddleston, in fact, to sign on for these things rather than a 7-year commitment.
Yeah.
So this is the first one, and it's interesting. The title's interesting, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So my feeling is that this is going to be about Sam Wilson building up to becoming Captain America.
Because if you look at that logo, there is the shield in the logo.
Mm. Yes, and we know that he has had a fitting recently for the cap suit. Mm. So
And look, these two are just so charming together. Their dynamic was great in those few scenes we've seen them together in. I am super hyped to just hang out with them for a bit longer. So I'm very much on board for this. I almost don't care what the plot is. I would quite happily watch them just shoot the shit for 8 hours.
I do care, because they're bringing back Zemo from
Civil
War.
I do care. Yeah.
A very cool way, because obviously he is captured at the end of Civil War, but he is not he's not dead, and he's going to have his comic book mask, which
is
exciting.
And he's looking uncaptured, isn't he, in that picture they put up on Instagram. So
my concern, and it's not really a huge concern because I do trust these people and what they're doing, is, but what you're saying, in the mask, what is he going to be? Are they going to turn what was actually a very complex, layered and really interesting character into a quote-unquote villain, which is something I don't want to see happen, because he never was a villain. He did some villainous things, but
he killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, okay, so he was not the best, but, you know,
he murdered Black Panther's dad,
but
you bastard.
What I'm saying,
he
what
also
I'm saying
drowned
is,
that person in a toilet.
But you had sympathy for him, and I think that was a really important point for MCU villains, like for him and Killmonger and Thanos. You know, these are characters that you empathize with, that you feel for, and I think I want to make sure that we keep that.
Like Sonny Birch and that man in the
world.
Oh, my God.
What? What is it?
I take your point, but I do think that there's enough meat to him that you can probably figure something out. Like, they did capture him. He's probably holding a grudge a little bit now against these two as well.
They know where he is, so presumably the first episode will not be called Finding Zemo.
I mean, it might be. We don't know.
Oh, my God.
We can hope.
From Hemo to Simo. What does that even mean?
I don't know.
I'm excited about this, so we'll see where it goes. And, of course, Simo can unlock Bucky's badness. Or can he?
Or can he?
Bucky thinks he's been fixed by Shuri and the technology of Wakanda. But has he? And will a different combination of words? Popcorn. Flying fishermen, will all that sort of stuff unlock Bucky? We shall see. That's going to be followed up in the autumn of next year, November of next year, in fact, by The Eternals. And before we get into it, I said on the podcast last week that I wouldn't be surprised if Marvel dropped in a major, major, like, guaranteed billion-dollar grosser next year to fill the gap left by Guardians 3. They haven't done that, interestingly. So next year will be the first time since 2016 that we have a two Marvel movie year, and neither of these, I would say, is guaranteed to hit the box office heights of previous films.
No, not guaranteed at all. But this is a really interesting one. I think this could be a bit of a linchpin for launching a whole lot of stuff. Because this, so the Eternals and their enemies, the Deviants, are meant to be essentially immortals who've been here among us this whole time and have been doing fuck all to help, quite frankly, during some really difficult battles that they really might have been useful for. Anyway, I'm sure there's some reason for that, which we will hopefully get into.
A film about people in a position of power doing fuck all to help the world in a moment of crisis, that feels quite on point at the moment.
That does have a certain resonance. But these people have been here forever. They're very, very, very powerful. They were created by the Celestials, who are people like Ego and the Nowhere.
Is Eternity one of the Celestials?
Honestly, I can't...
And the Living Tribunal.
I thought they were a different race again.
I thought the Collector was a Celestial. I need to go back.
Of the reasons I'm really interested about this film is it's a massive blind spot for me, Marvel-wise. Like, I don't know anything about these guys.
Honestly, me too. I've been reading up on them this week, and I now need to get into some serious comics, because there is a lot of potential here. There's a potential for infighting. There's potential for teaming up with each other. They've had kind of in history their own sort of spheres of influence and their own involvement in human history and human myths, and that's kind of cool and something they can really dig into and play with. It's interesting that they were sort of created by Jack Kirby as an attempt to do a Marvel version of his New Gods at DC. Yeah. They're actually going to arrive, I think, before DC's New Gods.
Uh-oh.
So you get the original maybe looking a bit like the spin-off here, which could be unfortunate, but there's really, really cool characters here. The casting is extremely diverse and interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that godlike aspect gives you the potential
to cast Angelina Jolie.
Well, to cast Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
But also to introduce a whole lot of shit into the MCU, because we know we're going to get onto it. We know that they're looking ahead. They're thinking about mutants. We know that they're thinking about vampires. These are the kind of things that can tie into Deviants or Eternals or both. Mm. And I'm interested to see what they do with these people.
Absolutely. So the cast is very, very interesting. Going to be headlined by Angelina Jolie, Salma Hayek, Kumail Nanjiani, Richard Madden. And they have the first deaf actor in the MCU in Lauren Ridloff as well. And of course, it's directed by Chloe Zhao, director of the Rider.
Which is a gorgeous film you should all go watch.
Yes, indeed. And it is this is a very, very exciting unknown quantity. Some people were kind of going, oh, isn't this going to be a bit like The Inhumans, which Marvel announced a few years ago, and then kind of went, no, nothing to see here, and they kind of vehicle reversing, realised it was going to be a big old sucky thing.
Yeah, I think this is their replacement for that, because that really, really didn't work.
Yeah, someone actually wrote into me going, I think some of these things aren't going to stick. I don't think Shang-Chi is going to stick. I don't think, we'll talk about it in a second, but Mahershala, I don't think there's going to be a Blade movie. And I said, this isn't like The Inhumans, which was announced years in the future, only had a release date, had no director, had no writer, had no stars attached. This has not only a cast and a director, but a release date is out next year. Shang-Chi has a cast and
these
a director
are in pre-production,
and a release date.
Like,
these are, Eternal starts filming very, very soon. Shang-Chi will start filming relatively soon and will be in cinemas in 2021. And as for Blade, you don't announce Mahershala Ali if you're not going to make a film starring Mahershala Ali as Blade. So I think that's going to happen. This isn't
unless it's part of the Dark Universe.
Unless it's part of the Dark Universe. Okay, so let's move on then to February of 2021 and the aforementioned Shang-Chi. And we talked about him on the podcast before. He's a martial arts maestro. And in some comics, he has the ability to replicate himself as well. This film is going to be called Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, a.k.a. The Massive Retcon. So,
but this is interesting. So you'll never see this coming. This replaces Travis Lattery, doesn't it, essentially? So we'll have the real Mandarin. We will see who that character is.
I don't think you understand Iron Man 3. Travis Lattery's not the real Mandarin, have you?
But in Iron Man 3, it's not like they don't necessarily allude directly in that film to the fact that there is another Mandarin, do they?
Well,
in the shorts that followed it, you realize that the Ten Rings, there is a Mandarin out there and that they've essentially been subverting it, and Statue reaps the rewards of that fraud.
Also,
but in the actual film, you'd be forgiven for thinking he's the Mandarin.
Is it confirmed that Tony Leung is playing the Mandarin?
It is.
I mean, that is amazing casting. He's fantastic.
Tony Leung, legend.
Absolute legend.
Legend of Wong Kar Wai films, John Woo's Hard Boiled, of course, an incredible
Infernal
actor.
Infernal Affairs, my God.
Yes,
he's incredible.
Yeah, he's an amazing, amazing actor, and he's going to be playing the Mandarin. And the Mandarin is a Iron Man bad guy. He's Chinese, and there was, I know there were worries at the time, right from the off of doing Iron Man, of having the Mandarin being the bad guy and worrying about stereotyping and a negative representation. And so they didn't want to go down that way.
But what, in this film,
which is directed by an Asian American, starring an Asian American about an Asian American character, they feel finally comfortable to have an Asian Mandarin, which is really great, and getting Tony Leung to play him is fantastic.
So good.
What I also love about this is that it actually does turn what Aldrich Killian does in Iron Man 3 into a bit of cultural appropriation, which is actually kind of perfect for that character. He takes something that is completely and utterly Asian and molds it for his own interests and ends because he's a dickhead. And I don't know whether they were planning that. They've been talking about how this will answer questions that have been seeded in the Marvel Universe from the beginning, and I'm scratching my beard going, really?
Sure, Jan.
But this could be exciting.
Maybe it will. Yeah. I think Simu Liu, who was kind of introduced as Shang-Chi, I haven't watched a lot of Kim's Convenience Store and I'm now planning to, but he seems super charming in absolutely the Marvel mold. He literally asked Marvel for this role, three or four years ago on Twitter, and I'm so pleased for him that he's got it. It's wonderful.
Yeah. One of my favourite things was him replying to one of his original tweets to Marvel saying, "How about me as Shang-Chi from 4 years ago?" And he just replied post Comic-Con saying, "Lol."
It was great. He said, "Well, shit," which is not very Marvelish. I mean, language. But yeah, very, very excited about that. Destin Daniel Cretton will be directing that one,
and Awkwafina's going to be in it.
Yeah,
amazing. This is all sounding super good.
You know, it's in the Black Panther slot as well in February 2021. The Captain Marvel slot as well. Those movies were huge, so maybe it's going to be an enormous. Who knows? That's going to be followed up very, very quickly, actually, by WandaVision, in which Elizabeth Olsen and a slightly bewildered looking Paul Bettany, who said, "I've never been as confused in front of this many people before," because he said, "I don't know how I'm in this either." Of course he does know.
Of course he does.
He's been told. They're back in WandaVision.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this. I'm very hopeful of it, actually. People were kicking off literally about the logo. I like it. But I think it's likely to be a sort of a not quite House of M style thing where she's, you know, maybe... let's say working through her emotional trauma by means of recreating reality entirely.
Yes.
Which could be very interesting. And it may also explain why she then crops up in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness soon after.
Indeed. So I'm excited about this. And of course, it'll feature Teyonah Parris as well as a grown-up version of Monica Rambeau, Lieutenant Trouble from Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And as people may know, that she's been a Captain Marvel in the comics in the past as well. Mm-hmm. So very excited to see what happens with her. Teyonah Parris as a grown-up Monica Rambeau and how she fits into that. And whether they're going to bring Vision back properly or not.
Yeah, it's a question.
Whether it's going to be a figment of Wanda's imagination. And then, yes, as Helen alluded to, or in fact outright said, Elizabeth Olsen will also appear in... and I love this title. And again, people on Twitter were going, there's no way this title's going to stick.
Oh, it will.
This 100%.
This may be my favourite title in the entire MCU so far. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
So here for it.
I mean,
I'm a Strange apologist through and through. I fucking love that film. Yeah. So I am totally down for this.
I'm extremely down for this having a horror tinge to it. Obviously, Scott Derrickson comes from a largely horror background. Mm-hmm. And I think I was expecting post Infinity War and Endgame, now that Doctor Strange is much more proficient in his abilities, that it was going to be more kind of psychological action adventure. And I'm sure it will have that element to it. But the fact that they're foregrounding the horror stuff in here, the sort of horrific potential of, well, like it says, the Multiverse of Madness, that is a direction that I didn't expect them to take with Doctor Strange 2, and I can't wait to see what that ends up being.
A lot of people have been asking me on Twitter this week, given this title and my already professed dislike of multiverse storytelling, or at least...
You don't like them, but Helen613 loves
that's
them.
That's true. Super into them. But no, it's not so much that I object to the existence of a multiverse in theory, but it's more I dislike it as a crutch and a way to get yourself out of storytelling situations so that they don't have any weight. If it's used for something like this, which is madness, then I'm kind of here for it a little bit more.
And if it's a character whose very introduction in the MCU was literally going through different universes and multiverses and being seen sights that we had never seen before, then I think it's absolutely on point. Scott Derrickson's back as director, as Ben said. Benedict Cumberbatch is back. And Cumberbatch said that Strange, as we've seen him now in Infinity War and Endgame, is a much more powerful, much more together version of the character than we saw in Doctor Strange.
Sorcerer Supreme.
I mean, is he still officially? I don't think he's a Sorcerer Supreme yet, but you think he has to take a test and then be ratified by the council. It takes a long time, paperwork. But anyway, but he said this is about breaking him down, and which is what a lot of second parts do, obviously. Yeah. But I can see throwing Strange into the mix, into a world or worlds that he doesn't understand, it could be really, really exciting. And whether Chiwetel Ejiofor comes back as Mordo, oh, I'm on board.
As long as they don't turn him back into a dickhead, I'm all in.
He's a little bit of a dickhead.
He will always be a dickhead.
But in a
lovable
way.
Dickhead.
Right, you love that this is a thing, right? You know that's not really a thing. I know you're shooting for it, but like, come on, aim higher, dude.
Speaking of dickheads, Loki's back. And this is very much a dickhead version of the character. Mm. Tom Hiddleston will return as Loki in the time-hopping Disney Plus series Loki. And it was confirmed by Kevin Feige that this will be the version of Loki who grabs the Space Stone in Endgame and disappears. Who knows where
when?
I'm not sure you can time travel with the Space Stone, but somehow Loki's going to work it out.
Space and time are technically the same thing, so in theory, maybe.
In theory? Okay, so we know that he's going to be going through human history in this, and some people were looking at the logo for the show, which is four different fonts, and trying to figure out whether this is a clue as to some of the time periods that he's going to go to. Will he, like Endgame, end up back in the MCU? Will he be able, you know, to influence Iron Man or Captain America? Who knows?
This is the series I most want to see. Just to spend more time with Hiddleston as Loki. I mean, what could be better than that?
And especially Loki sort of pre the grief of the Dark World and all the hugging and learning that he does, which I think the MCU does really well. I love that character and where he goes. But this is him at his like peak villain.
Classic bellend Loki. Yeah. Love it.
Hence why James is so excited.
Absolutely. Down with the lovable dickheads.
Takes one to know one. And then, this is really exciting. What If is the first animated series adaptation. It's going to be on Disney Plus, and it's going to be in the summer of 2021, and it's going to feature the voice talents of pretty much every single major MCU cast member, with the exception so far, I think, of Downey and Evans, who don't seem to be on board for this, but that might change. If you don't know what If is, it's literally a series of comic books that ran and basically said, what if Captain America was bitten by a spider, or what if Peter Parker was, you know, just a dickhead, or, you know, all this sort of stuff. So should be a lot of fun.
And Taika Waititi is in the voice cast, which presumably means Korg. There'll be some kind of Korg.
Right.
And this, they've said, will take place within the kind of timeline of the Infinity Saga. So it will, all the what ifs will take place within that narrative. So be familiar at least.
What if Ed Norton
continue
to be the Incredible Hulk?
Yeah. Ridiculous.
That's the first one.
And then there's another Disney Plus show, and this one is Jeremy Renner as Hawkeye, finally getting his solo vehicle, and he's going to be training up Kate Bishop, who, of course, is a very important character in the comic books. I wonder if this is going to be an adaptation of the Matt Fraction run, where he is basically a landlord of a New York building. Mm. He owns a New York building, and loads of shit happens.
The logo's pretty similar.
Very similar, actually.
So that's a good sign. That's a fantastic run of comics, and we can hope so. He is, of course, statistically the most valuable Avenger. Have you heard this statistic that they've lost four battles without him and won seven battles with him?
Wow.
So
who knew?
You need Hawkeye on your side, basically.
Those arrows, but, you know. Yeah. Go. He's like a mascot. He's the team mascot. When they don't have him, morale takes a dip and they all underperform.
Yeah, they all feel better about themselves when they have somebody who basically does nothing around. And they go, oh, I'm really contributing. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying the statistics imply that he's actually doing everything.
I mean, is he though? It's like the work experience guy. I'm not so sure about that. Then, November 2021, and this is a big one. It was announced last week, or it wasn't announced, it was leaked last week that Taika Waititi would be returning to do write and direct and Korg in Thor 4.
Thor 4.
What we didn't know is that film would be called Thor, Love and Thunder.
The other great new title. It's amazing. Yes.
What we didn't know is that film would also star Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie.
Mm. On board.
What we didn't know,
the most surprising part,
is that Natalie Portman would be back as Jane Foster.
As Jane the Mighty Thor Foster.
Yes.
And she will indeed be the female Thor as of the comics.
I'm surprised that she came back for this.
I'm amazed.
I'm not.
Really?
No, not really, because I think her issue was always a bit like, there's nothing really for me to do.
And I agree with her. And this is the whole thing. I am totally down for a passing of the Mjolnir to a female Thor. That's amazing. But her character character in inverted commas, is not the best. See, so I think they've got a lot of work to do to try and build her up.
I mean, I always liked her, and I like the fact that Thor has been, like, heartbroken for the past several films.
It was a mutual dumping.
It was mutual. Like, he keeps referring to, you know, he had that very maudlin bit in Endgame about her. And I think that just makes
girlfriend.
That adds something and makes it funnier when she comes back into it, because we see that he's been pining.
Yes. Yeah. Chris Hemsworth has been pining. That's right. That's it. I'm stunned because she wasn't... They couldn't even get her back for Endgame for that. They had to use archive footage of her in Endgame. So I thought the relationship had soured, but clearly...
Was it definitely archive footage? They didn't...
It looked like it to me. Yeah.
I thought they'd got her back for him.
No, that's an actual archive shot from Thor the Dark World. So that... This shocks me, but obviously if she's got something meaty to do, of course you could ask many, many questions. Will she wield Mjolnir? If so, which Mjolnir? Where is Mjolnir? The Mjolnir in this universe is now destroyed. Cap took it back and gave it back to Thor the Dark World.
Didn't Eitri make Mjolnir in the first place, or one of his mates?
If Peter Dinklage is back as Eitri, then I am very, very excited. And of course, all the things that they haven't confirmed for this, for example, there's no Tom Hiddleston confirmed for this. There's no Loki confirmed for this, but I don't think it's a coincidence that this is coming out after the Loki show.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the Loki show is going to somehow propel that version of Loki, the dickhead Loki, back into Thor's life. Because this would be the first Thor movie to not have Loki in it, and that would be a little sad for me.
Mm. Although, I mean, Taika did spend the entirety of the last movie relentlessly emasculating Loki and making fun of him.
He did.
So, you know, is he as essential in that...
I do wonder. I think there might be a way to get him into this. Will the Guardians of the Galaxy be in this, as was my theory in the last one, that rather than Thor being part of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which we now reckon will be 2022, 2023, that, in fact, the Guardians will show up in the beginning, even if it's just to go, bye, Thor!
I believe James Gunn has confirmed on Instagram that Thor Love and Thunder will be set before Guardians 3, so it seems like that might be the case, which is exciting.
Yeah. How exciting.
Do you feel like there's a missing spot somewhere in this lineup? Do you feel like there's a hole somewhere that they're not telling us about yet?
A hole?
A whole film that they haven't mentioned?
I mean... No, but
okay. I don't know, it's just a feeling.
No, please.
It's not based on anything, it's just a feeling.
The only thing I'm thinking is that next year's a two-film year, there's nothing in the middle summer. So, and then the 2021, they've gone for that February, May, November
pattern, which they're very comfortable with.
Served them well with Guardians 2 Homecoming and then Ragnarok. But anyway, we'll see what happens, but maybe there is room for them to drop something in big, but I think this is pretty much it. But another thing about this is that Tessa Thompson basically said that as King of Asgard, Valkyrie is looking for her queen, so she's basically confirmed that Valkyrie is bisexual at least, and that has all of this, pretty much this entire panel, this entire phase has got the incels furious,
because
I am there for it.
They confirmed a whole total of one white man, which was Richard Madden for Icarus.
One brand new casting
for White Man.
One of these five, well, actually, no, Thor.
No, but look, the White Men are obviously up in arms because all they have left at this point is
Thor. Not all White
Thor,
Men at this point. Let's point that out.
Is Thor and Loki and Hawkeye and the Winter Soldier
and Doctor Strange.
And Vision and
Spider-Man.
Vision, in fairness, is a purple man.
That's, I suppose, technically true. And the aforementioned Icarus, Richard Madden's character.
Yeah.
There's hardly any. It really is a white man free zone.
But what's interesting about this next run of five films is that there's only one white male director, and that is Scott Derrickson. Otherwise, you got Taika on Thor, Love and Thunder. You got Chloe Zhao. You got two female directors of next year's big films, Chloe Zhao and Kate Shortland. And then you have Destin Daniel Cretton, who's Asian American. Then you got Scott Derrickson, and of course, Taika as well. So there's a real embrace of diversity and representation in this phase. And of course, about damn time, and not before time. But it's good to see them doing this. And the fact that there's going to be... that Valkyrie might be an LGBTQ character is
openly
cool.
Openly would be cool.
So.
And not just mention it on the press tour, but actually put it in the film. Yeah. That would be exciting.
I wonder how that's going to work, because I still thought that they were going somewhere with the Thor-Valkyrie thing, and there's real chemistry between the two of those in Ragnarok. So we shall see how
but
that
I didn't
plays
feel
out.
Like it was necessarily romantic. I just thought that they instantly
really?
Had a...
Yeah. They really jump up into the spaceship at the end and they come very close to just straight up fucking right there,
I mean,
in the spaceship.
But they're both beautiful people. But beyond yeah. that, I didn't think it was necessarily romantic.
She also says, don't die. You know what I mean? So...
Yeah, okay, well,
But then that seems to have dissipated in the interim
yeah,
between
fair enough.
Ragnarok and Endgame.
We haven't mentioned a few others, have we?
Have we not?
No, like Blade.
That's what I was about to mention.
Okay.
So, right at the end of the panel, they had announced everybody, and then Kevin Feige went, we just got one more thing that this hasn't been rumoured about, and I love it when they actually pull surprises that literally nobody sees coming. He said, we haven't even had time to talk about Black Panther 2, which we are making. We haven't even had time to talk about Captain Marvel 2 or Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 or Fantastic Four, which is, I think... pretty much the first time that those yeah. words have left his lips.
Yeah.
Or mutants.
So he didn't say X-Men, he just yeah. said mutants.
Yeah.
I'm excited about
and
that.
And obviously people went fucking sweet. Nuts.
Absolutely
and,
daft, correctly.
And I think they're doing absolutely the right thing in delaying
yeah.
those
100%.
Characters.
I also genuinely do think that we're looking at a setup system here through things like Eternals. I think yes. there's going to be something.
And Multiverse of Madness.
And Multiverse,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and also it's very interesting that he didn't even mention... because Spider-Man Far From Home just broke yeah. $1 billion. So there's definitely going to be another Spider-Man movie, and he didn't even mention that. And they have to make it fairly soon, because Tom Holland's fresh-faced and youthful, but...
No one's fresh-faced and youthful forever.
Precisely. He ain't going to be playing a 16-year-old forever, so...
I think that he may be leaving that rather gentlemanly for Sony to announce, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ruin some other films of ours by announcing by announcing a sequel to Spider-Man before we've had a chance to announce anything else. So yes, I think you might be right about that. Of course, another thing he didn't mention, apart from obviously... Well, that's basically Ant-Man and the Wasp. Seriously, I do wonder if Ant-Man's going to get a third film. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure.
Because the second one wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but then he introduced Mahershala Ali.
Indeed. Yes, he did. He did. He went, please welcome 2-time Academy Award winner Mahershala Ali. And he came out on stage yeah. and he just put on a baseball cap. He didn't say a thing. Just looked cool.
Yeah,
Mahershala
very
Ali
cool. Yep.
Looked cool. Put on a baseball cap. The baseball cap said, Blade.
Blade.
And...
he missed a trip by not coming out and saying, because some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill. It's Mahershala Ali as Blade.
But luckily, Wesley Snipes said just that in a sort of, I think, blessing for Mahershala Ali taking over the character. It's a little unclear. I choose to see it as a blessing. And this is exciting. That's phenomenal casting.
Mm.
Someone suggested online, I can't remember who, I apologize, Wesley Snipes should play Whistler. I'm here for that also.
I
don't think he would.
Wesley Snipes apparently is a man who when he cameoed in What We Do in the Shadows, a TV show recently, as Blade.
As Blade, yeah. Well, the Daywalker.
Or the Day, yeah. yeah. I don't think they're allowed to use the word Blade. Apparently he answered the phone whenever Taika or Jemaine Clement would call him. He answers the phone, Blade. And there's a famous story about it on the... Blade Trinity said that he would leave post-it notes signed Blade.
Yeah.
So I think there's a chance feel he is Blade. So
honestly, there's a chance he is Blade.
There's every possibility. You never know. I love those movies,
yeah.
apart from Blade Trinity, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
And I think Wesley Snipes is fantastic in that role. And it was so important to establishing the yeah. MCU in a weird way. You know, you can draw a line through line from that to X-Men to Spider-Man and on. But I think if you're going to reboot it, then you get Mahershala Ali,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, that's an amazing, amazing choice.
Yeah.
And like Simu Lee, he basically willed this into being by the stories that after Green Book, after winning the Oscar for Green Book, he went up to Feige and said, I want to be Blade. And Feige, of course, just said, yeah, all right.
Yeah, all right. Done.
He knows a good thing when he sees
yeah.
it.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I didn't know that. That's incredible. Yes, so very, very excited about that and how they're going to fit vampires into the MCU and Spider-Man and X-Men and mutants and all sorts of stuff. But yeah, okay. Helen's got to go.
Yeah.
We all got to go.
Yeah, you do.
All right. Well, that's it for this little special. Hope you enjoyed it. And it is goodbye from Ben Travis.
Goodbye.
It is goodbye from Helen O'Hara.
Doodaloo.
It is goodbye from James Dyer.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to go up to Kevin Feige at a party and say... I want to be Uncle Ben. Make it happen.
The rice guy.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Oh, well. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.